Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we welcome the incomparable Bobby Clampett, teaching professional for the people. So stay tuned to get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad you'd be along. This hour, we have a great guest. Well, we say that a lot, but every once in a while, we turn over a stone. We've been trying to get this guest back on our show for a lot of weeks. Now, we thought, of course, he must still be based in Florida, down at the headquarters around Naples, and, you know, not a big deal. But no, this hour's guest decided, hey, I'm going back to the motherland. Let me go back to beautiful Monterey, California, and hang my shingle out there. So that's part of the reason we had trouble. Plus, he's a very popular guy and everything. Well, you know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about the one and only Bobby Clampett, who we welcome back to the show. It's been a long time, Bob. Appreciate you coming on the show and making time, because I know you've been super busy. We had so much to talk about this hour.
So much to talk about. We always do, don't we, Keith? It's awesome to be back with you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, people have obviously... Well, you've done everything. I mean, just about everything you could do golf-wise and such. An All-American at BYU, a very successful amateur career, go on to play on the PGA Tour for more than a decade, a decade and a half-ish, if you will. And then you go on for a multitude of years with CBS and that broadcast, and you are sorely missed. And I usually this time of year will turn to my dear friend, Ben Wright, because he knows every open championship course ever invented and every dug up over in the UK area. But he's no longer with us, obviously. But you know, you guys had a really good rapport. That was a great broadcast team, and I try to be professional and try not to be so finger pointing a thing. But the golf broadcasts these days are not nearly as good now as they were then.
No, it was a different era, certainly, back then. You know, you bring up Ben Wright, and I had the privilege of working with Ben for many years. And in the early part of my broadcasting career, I was with CBS for 29 years, but the early years was with Ben. And I learned so much from Ben. And you know, Ben had this very natural, easygoing way of broadcasting. And it was very comfortable for him. And I'll never forget my first PGA championship. Ben thought we were in rehearsal and we're live. And he's joking around with us and we're just having a good time, like we would often do with Frank in the rehearsals. And suddenly Frank says, "You British idiot, don't you know we're on the air?" And so it was only as Ben could do, you know, you've got to hear me, excuse me. Of course we are. Yes, I know, Frank. Yes, of course.
Always great recoil with the... His eminence. There's no question about that. And you mentioned the Ayatollah, Frank Cherkinian, dearly missed, and I never had an opportunity to have him on this show. We've been on on the radio for a long time now. As just my friend Jesse Ortiz would say, you're probably becoming one of the dinosaurs. We love it.
You probably are, but you know what? So are the rest of us, Keith. We're right there with you.
So why, at this point in your life, do you make this journey all the way across? You have a nice life. You've got the Impact Zone headquarters going on in South Florida, and you're comfortable and everything. And then you say, "Hey, Monterey is calling me." And now you've not only moved there, but you've taken it. We're going to talk in this hour. What you have, and I appreciate being sent the article that the great, infamous Monterey Herald put out about you and what you're doing in that beautiful part of the country, which it is. I mean, California is a hot mess, but that pocket there between Pebble Beach, it's been a long time since I've been out to Pebble Beach and Monterey, but man, what a beautiful part of the world that is.
Well, to coin a phrase from the legendary Gary McCord, whom I worked with at CBS for all those years, Gary would say, the reason I did this, Keith, is because I'm a stupid idiot. That's why. I just like to pay higher taxes. That's why I'm doing this. No, the reality is my 96-year-old mom became widowed about 3 years ago and needed a little extra support. And my wife and I agreed that we would move back to California and spend a lot more time out there or out here and watch over. So that's what we've done. And we're very happy here. We love California. There's a reason why California is more expensive.
Go ahead.
It's because it's worth it.
Okay, that's what you're going with? Okay, good job. Bobby Clampett is on the show this hour to inform you and have these breaking moments of time to inform you about things you never thought it was actually
I wouldn't say that about all parts of California, but the Monterey Peninsula is definitely worth it.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that. It's a rub. You must have done well in investments because I know that's now, I guess, the Clampett Ranch out there, but you bought this property not that long, a couple of years ago or so. Obviously prices were through the roof post-COVID.
Well, we bought this property a little over 2 years ago, and we sold some properties in Florida and another property here in California, so we were able to make the transition. But really what kind of drove this, in addition to needing to care for my mom, was my wife's love of horses, first of all. So we had a small ranch in Florida that we sold, and we moved the horses back here. But then also, I was really struggling finding a place to teach golf. I had been, we had really struggled in Florida. We have an indoor studio, but we had a really nice golf academy at the Ritz-Carlton Resort in Naples at Tiburon. We had a really nice academy at Renaissance. Things were going really strongly. And unfortunately, as things would happen, a different management company came in to Tiburon and saw our business and how successful we were and said, I think we'll just take that from you and we'll claim it as our own, which is what they did. So that was a really tough thing to go through. And then the other one, our friends who own the Renaissance Club contracted brain cancer, and in 12 months he was gone. And the other owner had to sell it, and the new company came in and said, the way our operation is, we just let the staff teach. We don't have any outside teachers. So we had to give that up too. So, I've learned a lot about the game and realizing that in my position, it's a situation where a lot of the professionals in the game are feel competitive with me if I'm going to teach at their club, so they don't want me around. So that's the sad dilemma that our game is in, because a lot of good teachers, I'm not the only one. I have a lot of my friends that are some of the very best teachers, and they can't find a place to teach either. So it's not just me. It's just the way the territory of the game is right now. And sadly, it's professionals are great at doing many things. They have to wear a lot of hats, and some of them can teach pretty well, but a majority of them have never learned how to teach golf. And it's really a separate profession. And so, sadly, it's why 70% of the people who take lessons today say they either get worse or don't get any better. And we just don't do a very good job in our industry of teaching the game. So we're kind of carving out our own specialty and special way of teaching golf through impact-based teaching, but it's hard to find a place to teach. So I built Clampett Ranch, and I have my own 18-hole par 3 course and my own indoor performance center here on my property, and nobody's going to kick me out because I own it and I'm here.
Did I say this hour's guest is a smart guy as well? I think I somewhere it bled in there. It's unfortunate because this is probably what my dear friend Bob Toski would say in this situation as far as the game and the teaching of it. So you successful, amateur, as I mentioned in the intro, then you go to BYU and you're an All-American there multiple years and golfer of the year. And then you get on the PGA Tour, which is rough, and you won. So that's a feather in your cap as well. But, you know, one time in the many years that you're out there, it can be demoralizing anyway. But then you get an opportunity to strap on the headset and talk about golf, which you know very much about. This industry of ours is the good, the bad, and the ugly. There's a lot of jealousy going on in there. There's a lot of pretenders. And there's a lot of wannabes and things like that. So when you look at the golf instructors that are out there, so many of them either haven't played at any level or haven't played at the top levels. And it's really unfair to those students of theirs who think that they're getting this great golf guru when that is indeed not the case a lot of times.
Well, that's it. And sadly, there is no place really where these professionals who are at the clubs have an opportunity to really learn to be a professional golf instructor. And it's almost a little bit like back 50 years ago when you went to the doctor, you went to the local doctor, and it didn't matter what ailments you had, you went to the doctor. And he was supposed to have the answer for everything, but he wasn't trained in everything. He wasn't a specialist in anything. He was just a general practitioner, right?
Right.
And now we've realized in the medical profession that we need specialists, guys that are really good and guys that can do a hip replacement and guys that can do, brain lobotomies and all kinds of things, liver transplants, you name it, right?
Right.
And they're all specialists in these areas, and they're good. They go specifically for training in the med schools for these things. And then they have several years that they have to study under somebody and really become good at it, and they learn to do it themselves, and then they become real experts. Well, that's really what's needed in the golf instruction business. And sadly, we don't have that. And so I've witnessed this since I left playing professionally on a full-time basis after the Champions Tour. I've witnessed this and witnessed the side of the game that I want to help, because that's a discredit to the millions of people who play the game who want to get better. There's not many opportunities for them to get better. And so we've got to make a change, and we've got to make a difference, and that's what I'm trying to do in the last years that I have and can contribute.
Wow, that's very impactful, Bobby, really, to have that desire still, because it's a great game. It's this industry is not in the great shape that everybody will tell you that it's in. There are struggles across the board, whether it's apparel or whether it's hard goods or golf courses or whatever it is. You know, it's better than it has been in the not so distant past. However, it's still not in good shape. But a guy who giving back to the game, it's great. Bobby's going to spend the hour with us, and we got so much to talk about. I want to get more into this Clampett Ranch thing, because it's not just where he lives now. It's where he teaches, where he plays golf, and really is an interesting impact on the community as well. With Bobby Clampett, we'll be back.
Hi, this is Ben Wright. No, it isn't. I'm Ben Wright, because if I was talking about this is Ben Wright, it would be referring to an inanimate object. And there's a lot of people out there who probably wish I was an inanimate object. But anyhow, Tee It Up with Keith Jones is going to be back in just a few moments.
We're back with Bobby Clampett, who's spending the hour with us, which is fantastic because we've got to catch up with him because he's already moved across country and he started things, stirring things up in Monterey Peninsula and that whole area out there at Pebble Beach and those kind of things. This is a big undertaking, going back to the Clampett Ranch. You know, you got a Carmel Valley training facility. And so are you looking to, besides help the youth get into the game better and have better facilities and such, are you looking to take it more in an adult direction as well? Who would be your students, or what are you trying to accomplish is what I'm trying to say.
Well, several things about that, Keith, because first of all, I have a great desire to help young people. And so some of my students are young people. But then I'm also working on revitalizing the local First Tee chapter here and creating new programming. I've been involved in about 7 different startups of First Tees over the year. And I can bore you with a lot of the history of my involvement with First Tee, but the bottom line is First Tee made a decision back in 2011 when they brought me in to train all their national coaches. And then they decided against that because they decided that the real message of First Tee nationally was to train the kids in the 9 core values, not to improve their golf games. And so there was a lot of attrition that there's been over the years within First Tee. And they determined that the attrition was due in big part to the fact that the kids weren't improving in their golf game because there wasn't any structured teaching that went along to help the coaches coach the kids. And so we're just starting to implement a brand new program here at First Tee in Monterey County. And I'm heading that up with our director, Nick Nelson. And I'm really excited about that. And I hope it's something that will take a look at, because First Tee's a great organization, but that's the one area that they could really use some help in. But it goes well beyond that. That's my students are typically, I'll tell you, my typical student is somebody who's in their 50s or 60s. They are looking toward the end, the latter years of their life. They're starting to slow down at work. They're looking at really wanting to build a golf game, and they're serious about building a good golf game. And they want the best instruction they can find with the best technology and the best facility and the best program. And so I think we've got exactly that. And so that's why they would come to me. And I only won't work with people that are really serious about getting better. If they're not serious about getting better, don't ever come see me, because that's not my student. And I only keep about 20 full-time students. That's it. So that's my particular program. But then again, Impact Zone, impact-based teaching has really caught on among the teachers. And I just finished 2 weeks ago, just published a new book called Mastering the Impact Zone. And it's part of it's a guide for our masterclass series that we just released as well. And it's all on impactzonegolf.com. But this is about educating the public as well as educating the instructor. So it's a starting point to our instructor certification, but it's also the center of how to educate the average golfer who wants to understand the game more and understand that golf is a game of impact. It's not a game of style that everybody has proposed over the years. Change your style and play better golf. Well, how do you explain the styles of some of the weirdest swingers in the history of the game, a Jim Furyk or a Bubba Watson or Bryson DeChambeau, or, you know, there's so many different kinds of golf swings out there, and all the teaching that you see is all about one particular style that they want to mold you into. And it's not a one size fits all game. But it is a one impact fits all game. So how do we help move people into better impact. And that's the way we more effectively teach people to play better golf. Rather than trying to reinvent their golf swing, let's just show them what they have to do at impact and teach them how to get there more effectively.
Fascinating. Makes so much sense. And that's, Bobby Clampett is obviously one of the creators of Impact Zone, and it's worked for a lot of people. And Bobby's been teaching for a lot of years, and here's a guy who knows what he is talking about. We'll be back their second half hour with Bobby Clampett after this break.
Hi, this is John O'Hurley reminding you you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. I haven't been this excited since I discovered I couldn't lick my elbow.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000 foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
We are back to start this second half hour of the show, spending it with Bobby Clampett. Yes, Bobby Clampett is busy, busy, busy doing so many things. And in the last segment, Bobby, I know you mentioned the first tee, and you could have told a lot of stories. Actually, off air, you and I can share a lot of stories. I had the opportunity to meet Joe Louis Jr. when he was heading the organization, and the PGA Tour was involved. I have been also at the starting line for about five different organizations. My hometown is Washington D.C., which has it's the city of Washington, which is not a state, but it's almost like the tri-state area, right? You have Virginia,
right,
which is really two states, and you have Northern Virginia and the rest of Virginia, and then you have Maryland, where I reside, and each jurisdiction and a lot of the counties in Maryland and Virginia had their own first tee, and DC had their first tee, so you had all these entities trying to raise money out of the same area. And it was just insane that they finally combined it to the first tee of greater DC. And now it's kind of funneled that way. Cause we couldn't ever figure out when I was up in the different counties, why we couldn't get money, because they said, oh, there's money there. You go get it. And here's what you do. Because the answer was the money had already been given to the first tee of DC, and that's the one that kind of flagship there. So it's a tough get. The premise, and I totally don't mean stand on the podium right now and breach this a little bit, but that was part of the whole thing. The first tee was supposed to be about learning ethics and learning your way around a golf course, and so it was golf involved. Yes, you can be a better student. You can be a better human being. All those kind of things kind of play into it. But that's what golf teaches you, or if you're taught the right way anyway. So the fun part for the kids, having been around a lot of them at the different events, is they get to hit the golf ball. Or they, you know, whether that's putting it or whether that's an iron or whatever it is, that's where the smiles come. You know, that's what the important part of it is. And then golf is a way of life, right? That's just, you know, G-O-L-F-L-I-F-E, right? It's another two four-letter words right there, right? So, you know, but that's a, you know, my spelling got better, I know. That's why I'm pretty proud of myself right now. Thanks, Ma. Thanks, Ma.
Well, that is the essence of First Tee, is teaching the kids in the nine core values and learning. It's really leadership training is what First Tee amounts to. Training tomorrow's leaders and using the game of golf as a tool to teach them to be tomorrow's leaders, to be good people, to have good values, to treat other people with respect, to treat others as they would themselves. You know, some of the golden rules that we've learned, well, that's not always taught to these kids, and it's important that they are taught these things. And what better way to teach it than through the game of golf? The missing link is how do we teach these kids to be golfers? Because if we just get them out there swinging and thinking golf is a natural game and they're just going to get out there and start whacking, they start developing all these horrible habits that the everyday hacker has developed. And the reason why, do you know, Keith, that the average golfer still can't break 100? And it's been that way for over 70 years in the United States. The average golf score hasn't improved one stroke in the last 70 years. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's
with
truly
all
crazy.
This technology, and it just goes to show you that we have not done as an industry a good job in teaching the game. And it's a sad commentary of why. Here's the other thing. I'll give you some more statistics. You were saying the game of golf is hurting. So before COVID, did you know that we went through 20 straight years of declining golfers and declining courses in the United States? 20 straight years. Now, COVID was a savior, but it wasn't anything the golf industry did. The golf industry was given a gift.
Right.
And so the elements of what led to that 20-year succession is still there. It's still present. And did you know that four million golfers in the United States quit golf every year?
Bobby, when I started doing this show back in March of 1998, this is how long I've been on the air. At that point, we had a relationship with the National Golf Foundation. And
yeah.
Then 3 million golfers would come into the game and 3 million people would leave the game. It was just It was a zero-sum situation. And here you're talking about more statistically based. It still continued for two decades. So it's like,
correct.
Because, look, again, I was talking about the four-letter words. Golf, I say this all the time, golf is a four-letter word, all right? But it's something you can't master. And you personally are one of the few people that have been able to almost master it. And this is coming from you.
Well, nobody really masters the game of golf. That's the beauty of it. But you can get better at it for sure. And there's better ways of learning how to play the game. You know, golf is inherently not a very natural game to learn. You learn a grip, whether it's the Varden grip or interlock grip or even a 10-finger grip. And the grip doesn't even quite feel right when you first grip a club. And then you're taught to make this backswing. And the backswing is like there's footwork that's related to it. There's a shoulder turn. There's a plane to the path of a club shaft. And there's wrist conditions that have to all kind of conform. And they all feel weird. And then you have to learn how to use your lower body to get through the ball and how to deliver the club down a straight plane line with lag and that flat lead wrist at impact. And then you need to learn how to power through impact with good strong ground forces and get to a nice finish where you're on that, all the weight's over onto your lead leg and you're on that off of your trail toe. Those are things that aren't natural. They're learned behavior patterns. And so many golfers skip the steps. You know, I've just gotten really into music lately, Keith.
Yeah.
And I started taking guitar lessons again a year ago.
Good for you.
My guitar teacher, Stevie, he teaches me the real foundation of music. I'm learning scales. I'm learning chord harmonies. I'm learning all these basic foundational music principles of how to play music, in addition to how to properly put my finger on the strings and make the transitions and what fingers go where and all these things. Imagine I was trying to teach myself how to play guitar. I was frustrated. I didn't know what proper fingering was. And he's taught me all these tricks that I'm 100 times better than I was a year ago because I'm learning the right way. This is exactly how we need to teach golf. We need to educate our people, first of all, and then we need to train them because it's not a natural movement. That's why we got so many hackers that can't break 100. They've never learned how to swing a golf club correctly.
You know, it's not only that. I've seen it because I play par three courses and I try to support the munis and such. And I go out and I'll watch, and it's painful. It's not just painful off the tee. The whole experience of watching the group in front of you is super painful. I mean, there's no course management. There's no decorum. There's no recognizing that after you're now on a par three, after your sixth shot, you probably should pick up and move to the next hole. You know, you don't need to stand over a putt and look at it for 5 minutes. You know, things like that. Yeah. It's just none of that stuff is taught. And then there's nobody marshaling either. Either it's staffing issue or whatever. So there's nobody to move anybody along. There's nobody to teach them along the way. You need to have certain skills before you get out into a golf course. It's not just here's, you know, and that's become an issue. And then what happens is, no matter the level of golfer, good, bad, or indifferent, the people get stacked up, get frustrated because the people in front of them and the front of them and the front of them are taking too long in playing a course that should be relatively easy. I mean, there's nothing, no knock on your par three, but there's nothing easier than a par three course, in generally speaking.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. No, it's a sad commentary. You know, I think about this poor fellow, and working with thousands of students and training hundreds of coaches over the last 15 years since I left the Champions Tour, I've really realized that there's a lot of, even though 4 million golfers quit every year, there's a lot of golfers that are on the verge of quitting because they're so frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about this one gentleman that I talked to who came to me, and literally he had tears in his eyes. And he said, "My game is so bad right now that all my friends at the club won't play golf with me anymore."
Wow.
And he says, I've lost my friends because my game's so bad. And I'm on the verge of just giving up my membership and selling my golf clubs because it's not fun. My friends don't want to be with me. The club doesn't want me. And what am I doing continuing to play golf?
Phew.
And I thought, this shouldn't be. This really shouldn't be the game. Yes, the game is hard, but if you learn right, the game can be one of the most rewarding things. You know, Ben Hogan once said the average golfer should be able to break 80. It's a pretty powerful statement from the great Hogan.
Yep.
And I believe that. I 100% believe that. And if people just learn how to properly swing a golf club, and, you know, today we have the fewest, only 14% of golfers take lessons. It's the lowest percent in history because they don't know who to turn to.
True.
It's so confusing out there. Even golf academies, you know, the average golf academy today doesn't have a system of teaching golf. They just have 10 instructors. They're all teaching differently. How does a person know which one to go to? It's so confusing because one guy teaches one style, another guy teaches another style. It's so confusing. There's no standard.
Bobby, it takes me back to the Golf Channel when it was like truly the Golf Channel, and they would have the instructors on Monday nights. And I tuned in just for a couple seconds to see who was on there because every week it was a different instructor teaching their own way. So if you're somebody they want you to watch the program to learn things. So if you do that for a month or two, you're going to be totally tied in knots because it was it was confusing as heck. And I'm a guy who's involved with the industry and has a little bit of a swing and knows, you know, enough instructors to be dangerous, right? And I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, what am I watching?
It's so true. And I was one of the ones on the Golf Channel. I was a member of the Golf Channel Academy, and I did a lot of tips and things with them. And sometimes they put me with another instructor who was saying something completely contradictory to what I was saying. And I go, what kind of message are we leaving the American people here? There's no system. I have a system of teaching golf called impact-based teaching. But everybody else has a style that they're trying to work somebody that they believe is the right way to turn. All we got to do is, you can't argue with impact. Impact is, there's the best impact. There's how to make it consistent. And that's where we need to be leading people to play better golf, is teaching them to have better impact. Because if you have better impact, you're going to play better, period. You don't have to think of all these millions of different conflicting swing thoughts that drives you crazy and clogs your head with a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, you brought up Jim Furyk, and I think he's a great example, because he does the old twirly-wally thing, and he's been winning major championships and everything with that over the years. So it's not that whole dipsy-do thing. It's what happens on the ground, those few inches there. So the impact makes total sense to me. But what happens, as you know, with a lot of recreational golfers, they release the club too soon, so they can't get the proper impact on the ball.
Well, that's a big part of it. But you know what? Sadly, Keith, the average golfer doesn't know what proper impact is.
I would go with that.
They've never been taught that. It's like a guitarist not knowing scales or chord harmony.
True.
You know, you've got to know the essentials. It's like putting somebody behind the wheel of a car and they don't even know what the foot pedals are for. It doesn't make any sense. And that's why the first step is, you got to educate the average golfer. And that's why I've developed my masterclass series, because that helps educate the golfer on what is proper impact and how to accomplish it on every shot in golf. You know, most people don't even realize there's a proper angle of attack in the golf swing and a very different angle of attack in putting. And they wonder, well, how do you put a good roll on the ball? It's a very precise scientific measurement. It's called upward angle of attack, and the loft of the putter, effective loft of the putter, has to be less than the angle of attack to get topspin. It's a simple formula, but they don't even realize, oh, you're supposed to have topspin on a putt?
Right.
Yeah, it's like, okay, in forehand and tennis, they teach you that in tennis right away. If you're getting a forehand, you want to be low going high so you can put topspin on it. Your angle of attack is up into the ball. You know, you're shooting a basketball, right? You're shooting a free throw. There's an optimum arc of the shot that's going to help increase your percentage of free throws made.
Yeah.
If you're trying to shoot it in a straight line like Shaq used to, you're going to be a 50% free throw shooter. Right?
if you're lucky. Nice Shaq reference there. Way to throw that in there, Bob. All right. No, but you're right. It is. Sports is science. We hear a lot about this. It's gotten more scientific over the years because guys like Dr. Greg Rose have started the Titleist Performance Institute and all these other things, you know, that, you know, TrackMan and all these technology-based items come in and try to show you things. But even with like something like the TrackMan, most people don't know what all the numbers mean anyway. It's just, you know. It's all this overload, and that's the rub. That's the problem that we're going to talk about in our final segment. And that is, well, we're happy to have Bobby Clampin on. The guy knows what he's talking about. Finding the right way to do it is the issue, and Bobby will kind of break that down on a little bit more on how he can get around and doing that. And we'll be back with the guitar virtuoso after this last break.
Hi, this is Annika Sorensen, and you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones.
And we're back to wrap up the show. Man, this has been a great hour. Now, you know, Bobby's got to come back on more often, but, you know, when he's not out mowing his golf course or manicuring the greens and that kind of thing, you know, We'll find out. Or scoop, and here's one for you.
Artificial turf, Keith.
Oh, yeah. Or scoop or clean it up after the horses. That's what I want to.
Yeah.
How long did it take to get the ponies from Sunshine State to the Golden State?
Oh, my wife has made that run probably 20 times now. And she usually does it in, trying to remember, I think it's 7 days she takes to make that run from Naples, Florida, all the way to Carmel, California.
Oh, wow. She does it herself with the trailer, pulling the trailer?
She has, yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. She's a tough cookie. Yeah.
I hear you. I've transported mules and such before.
She's a black belt, so nobody wants to go up against her.
Yeah, trying to figure out how you got her. That's what you know.
So am I. I'm happy I did.
Yeah, it sounds like you sound like a happy man. You sound, not that you don't always sound happy every time we talk, but you know, you do sound a bit satisfied to where you have landed.
I am, because I've got a mission, Keith. You know, when you have a purpose and a mission, you get inspired, right? I mean, that's why I just finished writing a Mastering the Impact Zone book. It's 504 pages. Who writes a book that's 504 pages? And there's so much in there, because I have learned so much in this game of golf, being around the best of the world, and working at CBS for 29 years, studying the best in the world. So I've been so blessed to have that background, right? I've played over 500 tour events in my life. I've broadcasted over 350 tour events in my life. Been around the game, and I've seen a lot. And when you play the tour, you play a lot of pro-ams. And when you play a lot of pro-ams, you see a lot of what is the state of the game. And how people are playing and where the problems lie. So that's what's really driven me in the creation of impact-based instruction, because it simplifies the game. It cuts to the core. Get your impact right and you play better golf. You don't have to worry about whether you want to be in Dustin Johnson's left wrist position at the top of the backswing or Freddie Couples. They're two very different. They're both Hall of Famers. They've both won Masters, but they got very different wrist conditions at the top. And all these pros are sitting there arguing which one's better.
It doesn't matter from that standpoint.
It doesn't matter. You know, then you got a guy that's laid off at the top. You got another guy that's across the line. You got one guy that's got a shut face. Another guy's got an open face. You got one guy's got a strong grip. Another guy's got a weak grip. The other guy's got a short backswing of John Rahm. The other guy's got a super long backswing, Payne Stewart, John Daly. You know what? It's so information overload about things that don't matter. Fix your impact. Use the swing you've got. Just fix your impact, and you'll play better golf.
Other than reading your books and all that kind of stuff, how can people do that?
Well, if they go to impactzonegolf.com, they'll see right now, the masterclass. That is six different masterclasses all put together. It's $7.99. We're about to launch a special. So if they go and do it today, we'll include the special, and they will get a copy of Mastering the Impact Zone for free. So the combination of the two right now, that's the way to go do it. And that really lays the foundation for learning. It's going to take the average person over 20 hours of study to go through the master class. And then if they want to read the book on top of that, that's even more. But it's worth the study. It's an investment of time. And why not invest your time to be able to understand the game from an impact perspective so that you can play better golf? It's a good investment.
Yeah, that's the key right there. Yeah, you were a pretty good investment this hour as well, my good man. Bobby Clampett, just a successful story all the way across the board, and a guy who knows a little bit about the game. Visit his site at impactzonegolf.com and find out more. But Bobby's a got his ranch out there doing great things around the world as far as golf is concerned. So we appreciate that. We'll look forward to catching up again. But we're out of time. Get out there, as Bobby would say, practice your game. Practice, practice. Take your game to the next level. And we will talk to you next week. Take care.